the fans, by the fans. Welcome to the Non-League Football Show podcast. I'm Caroline Barker. Coming up this week, with whopping amounts of money about to change hands in the Premier League for players, how much do you need to get out of the National League? Plus, what's in a name? We meet the club dropping theirs. Well, sort of. The Non-League Football Show, sponsored by Pitch Hero. Running your club online should be simple. So start your free Pitch Hero trial today and see what a Pitch Hero website can do for your club. Let's bring in the team. Money won't buy his love, although he's probably sorted him out in the clubhouse on this sunny afternoon. Former manager at AFC Wimbledon, Dave Anderson.
Good afternoon. And just to put the record straight, money can buy anything.
Has it bought you a position overlooking the team this afternoon?
It has indeed, yes. I'm just overlooking the 18th green at the minute, but that's a whole different story. And it can't buy love, and there's an awful lot of it going into the game at the minute.
Love or money?
Oh, money.
And have you got sunstroke, or have you just consumed too much alcohol?
No, I'm non-alcoholic at the moment.
Non-alcoholic?
Yeah, I'm usually alcoholic, but I'm non-alcoholic at the moment.
Is the other end of it. It is that time of the year. Have you been tapped up for a job to go and manage, or are you being asked about players?
I had a very interesting conversation last week with someone who'll remain nameless, that made attempt at me out of retirement, but it didn't happen, so there you go.
So you couldn't be tempted then?
No, well, it was very, very special circumstances, and it didn't happen. So, and it was only a temptation; it wasn't a definite. But when you say about being topped up about players, what tends to happen is the longer you're away from the game, the less phone calls you get about players, because obviously you're not watching it, and the clientele changes. You know, and if anybody knew me at all, they would know my knowledge. My success was never born out of my knowledge of players. That was always my staff's job.
Your success?
Well, yes, obviously. It's not with a capital S.
But it is for non-league clubs. Do you get all the stuff done now? I mean, half the players that I follow on Twitter are all already off to Ibiza and the like. I'm not stereotyping, but they're already going on their holidays. And the quality players have signed the deals, haven't they? They get them done now.
Yeah, I think any manager wants to get his squad put together as quick as he can. I think it depends on how big your club is. You know, if you're at a big club, an Ebbsfleet, Billericay, somewhere who is chucking money around, I think it tends to be easier to get people in quicker. And then as you work your way down the food chain, and I remember the differences of being at Wimbledon compared to the likes of Harrow, you have to wait your time. You have to wait until the big teams have their feed, and then whatever's left coming into pre-season and all the way through pre-season, you're still on the outlook. So everyone wants to get it done as quick as they can, Kaz, but some people have to sort of bide their time.
Did you ever find yourself in a situation where you got to you got into the bulk of the pre-season friendlies just before the season's about to start and you've still not got the players that you want? And do you panic then?
Yeah, most seasons. I remember...
But did you set yourself a cut-off date, a cut-off time?
No, you can never do that. You can never go that... I never set a cut-off date in 30 years. You're always looking to improve, and if you can improve up until the last day of the season, you can do it. I know you can't because of deadlines, but you know the point I'm making. Yeah. I remember my first year at Harrow when everyone else sort of, the squad had left. We played Queen's Park Rangers first team, and all of this Dave Howell's squad, David gone to St Albans, I'd got the Harrow job, the whole squad stayed, and I thought, well, this is reasonable. They made the playoffs last year. It'll be good. And then we played Queen's Park Rangers first team at Harrow. And the next day, it was like a ghost town. There was about seven players left the next day. They'd stuck around for that game. So then we had a real, and I don't blame them. It was, they'd earned the right to play against QPR, and they did that and moved on. But it made it very hurry. And you know, I remember it took us, well, we went into the last week of the season, not sure if we were going to stay up, and we eventually did. So it can have massive effect on you. The other thing is that sometimes you just miss the boat. You miss players by minutes. You don't get the blend right, and you realise that when you're halfway through pre-season, you have to address it. You can't sort of shut your eyes and go, well, I hope it works out. You have to identify that you've made a mistake and try and rectify it. So the thing that always made me laugh about some non-league football clubs is that you don't get paid until the first week of the season. And that's some managers as well. Try and phone any manager at this time of the year now, and they are absolutely working their socks off.
And they're the managers, like you say, they've probably got another job doing 52 other things too and trying to sort it all out at the same time. But you understand why they don't pay them to the first week of the season. It's a blooming expensive business. We will move on and get some proper people to talk to, and not just you in a minute. But can you, when you look back at your managerial career now and all the non-league clubs that you're at, can you pinpoint the seasons where you had the bulk of the squad, and more often than not, did you do better in that following season then by being able to retain them?
Yeah, I remember my last season at Hendon, where I'd built the squad over 2 years, and we went into the last year and I made minimal changes. I don't remember off the top of my head, but the whole squad was set up and we went into that season and I really thought we could compete, and we did. I then got the Wimbledon job and took half of that squad with me. So the first couple of weeks, I remember at Wimbledon it being quite busy because I was offloading a lot of players who I'd inherited and bringing in the lads I wanted. Once I got them in, I knew we'd be fine and we won the league. So yes, you do. You get a feel that you're more than ready for it. You know, even then you can be wrong. Every manager will tell you, you're always nervous until you play the first couple of games. You know, all the preseason games in the world do nothing until you hit all they do is get your match fitness up and give you an idea. The first day of the season is always a nervous place for any dugout.
They're about getting a bit of cash in, though, aren't they, as well, pre-season friendlies?
Yes. Yeah, that's not my responsibility. That's the club's responsibility. But, yes, you try and balance it.
Really?
Well, it's not.
I remember when someone will remain nameless, but when I was involved at Chelmsford, one of his things when he came for the job, he said, I come for the job with X, Y, and Z clubs that can come for pre-season friendlies. If they come and we get X amount through the gate, then can I have that towards my budget?
Well, yes, that's fine. If you can do that, you can do that. But I don't think it's his responsibility to do that. You know, that's like me coming in the door and going, I'll get you three big teams for pre-season. Could you get me two centre forwards?
If the money comes through.
No, I think it's a good addition. It's a good selling point. And don't get me wrong, with the contacts I had, I used to be able to get reasonable pre-season games that could maybe earn a couple of bob. But it's not high on my list. My list is, what does the squad require to make the team successful? Because the bottom line is, if we're at the bottom of the league and the board are having a meeting, they're not going to go, well, we'll keep him in a job because he got Man United here pre-season. So I think that the vast majority of it sits with the board and the club to set up. You know, if they want big pre-season games, then they need to tell you that's what they want. Can you get them that? But realistically, I went into it trying to balance my pre-season between sort of games that will test you versus games that will give you confidence. So and structuring them in the right way. But yeah, I understand the point that if Man United phone you up, you're never going to say no, are you?
We played a Man United 11 when we had Paul Parker as manager at Chelmsford. I think the only recognisable player was Mark Bosnich. And that was when Mark Bosnich was on his way out of Manchester United. so he had all sorts of problems at the time. But yeah, I think we got maybe 2,000 maybe two. Oh, actually, I can't remember. But we weren't playing in Chelmsford at the time. We were nomadic, so it helped. It certainly helped. Anyway, I've waffled on enough to you.
Yes.
Mainly because everyone we've tried to call is now on a voicemail. So I'm hoping.
Well, I didn't think for a minute that you really wanted to talk to me.
Well, I was genuinely interested in what you, I mean, we've had a, let's tell everyone, we've had a stinker today. We were supposed to have Swampy on too. His technology is not working. And now everyone's on voicemail. But, you know, I'm not going to take that as a sign that no one loves us and we don't care. but I think we'll pause for a moment and reflect on what could have been. So everyone's still not answering their phone, but fear not, we're going to talk England C a little bit later and a name change too, and then we're going to hunt down all those people that haven't answered the phone and make them come on sometime soon. Just before we move on to talk England C with Mickey Payne, just wanted to ask you about these quotes this week. I'd only seen it from Boreham Wood boss Luke Garrard, Dave. He's been talking about the National League being the toughest. They were promoted a couple of years ago. He says about, you know, obviously you've got Ebbsfleet coming up into the League Two and the money that perhaps is going to be around. It was tough last year if, and it's lazy cliche journalism perhaps from us, but if you want to label Fylde and Ebbsfleet as big spending, you've got Maidenhead in there too, who did so well in the National South. Halifax with all the crowd that they bring up too. It's great for the fans neutrally watching the National League at how competitive it's going to be, but if you're a manager, they're kind of, the desperations, the stakes to get out of that league or stay in that league are going to be tough.
Yeah, I think every league's the same. I think you know, Luke will probably have a couple of concerns. One is he's just lost Junior Lewis to Dagenham, his first team coach, and that'll be a big loss for them. A couple of his bigger players have moved on, and when you're a smaller side, it's difficult to replace him. We've spoke about that in the past. Will it be harder next year? It always seems the year after is harder than the one before. I think the National has now become, well, it's a full time. It's a professional league. When you're working off the budget restraints that I'm guessing Boreham Wood are working off, then it will be a task, yeah.
AFC Fylde, who went from being Kirkham and Wessam, the chairman, David Haythornthwaite, came in as well, talked about changing the name, building their new stadium, and they rise up the football pyramid too. So they're going to be one of those teams to look out for. Is it a league you look at, Dave, and think now is professional and is professional from top to bottom?
Yeah, I wouldn't say all
as
the
it,
way
as
to
in
the
a
bottom.
Full time.
Yeah, no, there'll still be a couple of part time sides. I don't think, you know, Maidenhead will certainly be part time, I'm guessing. I know Boreham Wood do 3 or 4 mornings a week, so that sort of makes you full time. It is a top league, Kaz, and I don't think just with the National League, I think with all leagues, all of a sudden there's more money around. And if you can't keep up with that, then it's going to make your task more difficult at any level, in any league. But there's no doubt that the National League Premier, I can't believe I've said it so many times without getting it wrong, but the National League Premier is a proper professional league now. You watch how well Lincoln City do in the Football League, and that will show you how good the National is.
You know, you get a gold star if you actually call it the Vanarama National League, and then you're well away. But that's too much for a body to bear when no one's picking up the phone.
We need to hide who's calling. I think they're hiding from us.
Well, while you go and sort them out, not in a menacing way, let's take a moment again to breathe. You are listening to the Non-League Football Show podcast, sponsored by Pitch Hero, the UK's number one provider of sport club websites. If I'm giggling, it's just off-air. I was telling Dave Anderson about, and I don't know how it happened, that I had a foghorn sound effect downloaded on my phone. But 2 o'clock this morning when I was driving home from Manchester, having listened to Bridge Over Troubled Water, don't ask me why that, it was on random shuffle, and that my mum likes that song. Right at the end of it, this huge foghorn came out. And when you're on the M6 with no one else around, I mean, it was perfect symmetry. I wanted to record it, but I couldn't, obviously. Anyway, I don't know why we were laughing about that. Maybe because Dave's had too many of his gin and tonics that we hear rustling around in the background. But you were about to tell a story.
No, I was just going to say that I have a story about everything. Foghorn, not a problem. I remember one night at Wimbledon, I can't remember who we were playing, but we were sort of 2-1 up at halftime. Come in at halftime, come out, and the fog has just come down where you can't see more than 20 feet in front of you. And the guy on the tannoy from somewhere had downloaded a foghorn. And it was the funniest thing I'd ever heard, you know. But we had to go back in. There was another 10-minute delay, and then it cleared. But I just thought it was thinking very clever on his part, you know.
Sure, it was a foghorn and not just you opening your mouth.
Well, that's what some people said.
Yeah, we've subjected our next guest to listening to us ramble on like two old dears. England Sea assistant to Paul Fairclough, Mickey Payne joins us. Hi, Mick.
How are you doing, Caroline?
Dave, do you have any foghorn stories? I mean, feel free to tell them.
No, I match those, you know that. Not those two that Dave's come out with. I mean, no way I can match that.
Mainly probably because you're probably a bit knackered, aren't you? England Sea in action this week. Mixed fortunes.
Yeah, I say we got back about 9 o'clock last night. Well, I arrived home about 9 o'clock last night, but a terrific 6 days together. You know, a real opportunity to, you know, bed in some new talent, if you like, in terms of, you know, we haven't seen before. So it was a really terrific 6 days, good tour, and some interesting fixtures.
So a 2-1 win over Punjab. This was the first South Asian national team against an England side. So that was a bit of history as well, wasn't it? And then you lost 4-3 on penalties to Jersey, but you were 1-0 up, weren't you?
I'm not going to class that as a... Sorry, Caroline, I'm not going to class that as a loss because it was 1-1. It was sort of decided. It was a, you know, it's never a friendly fixture, but it was decided that there was a trophy put up from someone in Jersey, and they, you know, we could have shared it. They said we'd take some penalties, and it was, and that's what it was. I mean, to be honest, we played exceptionally well in that game. You know, really played some excellent football. We passed the ball around. They just sat really deep all game. You know, fair play to them. They stayed in the game. I mean, and their report in their newspaper the following day was like, you know, England were just a different league, you know. And basically, it was an FA 11 that game anyway, officially. But it was terrific play. And they scored a very good goal in the 92nd minute. They scored, and you know, basically it was a bit of a bitter pill to swallow. But it was a great exercise, and we're delighted how the players, you know, responded all over the tour. Really,
I mean, that's the kind of football I love. Let's just go straight to penalties. Someone put a cup up, and away you go. Go on, Dave.
No, I was going to say, to be fair, Mickey, if you'd have won it, you'd have still had it on your CV, wouldn't you?
Oh, exactly, without doubt. You listen, everyone likes winning a trophy, and as we say, there's no friendly fixture in football. Yeah. If you're competitive, Dave, you know that. You've been there and done it. You know, I don't class as friendly games, you know. And but, you know, just going back, if you don't mind me, going back to the first game, Dave, the Punjab was a really, you know, from a point of view of sort of opening doors with the Asian community, it was a really great, it was a piece of history. And I've got to say, there were some good players, some strong individuals. They were strong, you know, they were men. You know, our side was predominantly all guys who were like 22. I think was the oldest in the squad. So it was excellent. I've got to say, they surprised a lot of people, the Punjab squad, yeah.
Yeah, and Mick, just talking about the whole thing as a venture. Now, I understand that why you sort of made a load of changes to the squad and tried to blood new people. It's always a good idea. And every time you interview management about these ventures, they always talk about the positives, and rightly so. I'd like to ask you, what the negatives were about having so many new young players in your squad. And when I say negatives, I mean, what was a little bit harder? Tell me the downside of doing that.
Well, I think the challenge, Dave, is that, you know, it was one, we had one boy who's been involved. One lad was Jamie Montgomery, the keeper. I went and had a look at him from Gateshead. He was the only one who's been involved before. The other 17, as I said, Dave, the idea of it was to try to look at young talent that's coming through, you know, the non-league system. When you say, I don't believe there's downsides, Dave. What there is challenges, you know that as a manager. And, yeah, but it's, again, it's trying to get them to bed into your ideas, trying to make them appreciate what they're, what they're getting when they get called up for this. And, you know, if you spoke to some of these players, they weren't sure. So, again, the idea of it is trying to get them to establish where they're going to be and what they can achieve by being in this squad. So there's those challenges. And also the biggest thing is making them a team very, very quickly. And honestly, if you've seen the last day in Jersey, the guys have all got their shirt. I've never seen it before, actually. They were all signing their own, you know, shining shirts for their mates and things like that. And it was quite incredible, you know, these lads who had only joined up and, you know, from far and wide, really. And it was, so that side is, that's the challenge for us. Me and myself and Paul. Paul, you know, is great at doing that, bringing the squad together very quickly. So when I say downsize, it's just getting it to be a team as quick as you possibly can, you know.
Sure. And just finally, was it well supported?
In terms of what numbers of the games?
Yeah, people who came to watch the games.
Yeah, I mean, at Solihull, I think there was, well, I believe there was over 1,500 there, which was decent. You know, it's a sort of the end of season type of game. So that side, but in saying that, Dave and Caroline, I don't know if you realise, the game was put out live on TV on the Punjab's channel, and it went all the way over to India, also to Canada, and they said there was, like, you know, over 5 million viewers on that. All over, you just can't even imagine that. And
brilliant.
So it was on, you know, on that sort of their channels on the web and things, you know.
Just before we let you go, Mickey, and thank you for saying my name there, because I know Dave was just you know, hogging it all.
I don't get to speak to Mick much.
All right,
it's
enough.
Good fun.
Enough. I was just going to ask
you. I miss you two guys.
Yeah, it's mutual. I don't know if you saw these comments from Luke Garrard this week, the Boreham Wood boss. He was talking about this being the toughest year. I mean, they've only been a couple of years in the National League, but he reckons it'll be the toughest season to come. The players that you've seen come and go, and when you're looking ahead to next season, Mick, do you look at it and think that that's going to be blooming difficult to get into the Football League from next year?
Yeah, I do. I mean, as I said, I maintain the National League, you know, it's a strong league, you know. Although I do believe Lincoln will do exceptionally well in the Football League, but you're right, you know, it's a challenge for a lot of clubs now. And you know, the players are, there's going to be some changes, I believe, you know, with their sort of clientele that clubs are going to have. But it's going to be a difficult one to, you know, maintain those standards to try to get into the Football League, no doubt about that.
All right, Mick, a pleasure as always. Thank you for coming on, and we'll see you in the flesh sometime soon.
Well, let's hope so. And brilliant, you know, the show's going terrifically well. I know a number of people, you know, get this podcast and things like that, so congratulations on bringing that all through. And you know how much the support that you give is fantastic. So wish you all the best on that.
Ah, you're a diamond.
Cheers, Maggie.
Cheers, down at England, see running all the line up there. Yep. Off he goes into the distance. He still wanted to talk to you, Dave, but, you know, that's understandable.
Goalkeepers Union.
You are. Yeah, exactly.
It's a goalkeepers union. And when any time I'm with him, offer in the bar, wherever it is, it's always good fun. He's a top man.
Who would win if Mick was having to take penalties against you and you were having to take penalties against him?
Well, football wouldn't be the winner, that's for sure.
Well, let's round up with a quick look around some of the other news stories. What's in a name? Well, Evo Stickside Radcliffe Borough have decided to drop the borough. They'll still keep the nickname, even on a new badge. It's all about a rebrand. Paul Hilton's the chairman and he joins us now. So, Paul, what's the idea behind it?
There's quite a lot of reasons, really. Partly around rebranding, as you said, and partly around re-identifying with the community. That's the key point, and the driver behind us making that decision was that, you know, Radcliffe, it actually isn't a borough anymore, and it hasn't been since 1974. So, I mean, it's a long time that it's been called that for its entire 68-year history, the club. But it's actually been incorrect, and we felt that it was time to modernise.
I'm going to let you in on a secret. My team, Chelmsford City, we were never a city. We were always a town. And then the Queen deemed to make us a city just a few years back. So we've been living under that lie for a while. But it's difficult, isn't it? Because as fans, you identify with a nickname, don't you? I mean, you're even keeping it on the badge. It is something that you hang on to. Does it really matter?
Well, I think it's part of the personality. I've described it as the name, the borough, being the personality of the club, but not being the correct identifier. You know, what people call us the borough, it's the colloquial term for the club. You know, if you're speaking in short bursts, you sort of call us the borough. The fans shout the borough, you know, come on the borough. All those things reference the borough, but they don't reference it generally in the full name. And a lot of the time when you find us on a league table or recognised in the press or mentioned in various different publications, people call us Radcliffe anyway. And really, the town itself, you know, needs to be recognised. And I think by the time, ironically, by the time you've said Radcliffe Borough, you've almost forgotten you've said Radcliffe.
Yeah. Well, someone who always forgets his own name, Dave Anderson, has got a question.
Yeah, I'm on East Harrowborough and I never forgot Harrow, believe me. To be fair, Paul, my whole opinion of it all sort of sit on the answer to one question. When you came up with the idea of this, did you speak to the supporters about it? Were they involved in the decision?
Yes and no. We had a small group, because obviously we didn't want to go out too wide with it, because it would just get out and other people would talk about it. So we had a small group of people that we consulted, and obviously we consulted ourselves internally as a committee. And then we released it to our fans group as a whole on Sunday at our award ceremony, at the end of, you know, annual dinner. So there was a little bit of trepidation beforehand, I'll admit, but it went down extremely, really, extremely well. So we were pretty happy with that then.
Yeah, I mean, that's fine, because the one that springs to mind for me is Hull City, Hull Tigers. You remember that? And the supporters really sort of reacted badly against it. I think if you've got the supporters on side, you can call it anything you want to call it. But I think it's very important that they, you know, they've supported the club, that they have their say in it.
Yeah, I totally agree. And it's fortunately in this respect, you know, we've built our reasons around it very early. We explained ourselves immediately when we described what we were going to do. We produced a document for everybody which explained not only the sections of the badge and why we'd use the iconic features from the town within the badge, but we also explained the fact that we'd come to the decision based on the reality of the situation, which is that, you know, the elephant in the room, that we're not a borough. And when you start to break down each individual reason, I think most people, you know, traditionalists obviously will have their view, but most people see the sense in it.
Interesting that you've done it now, Paul. What's the kind of, I take it you've got it, the next plan for next season, the 5-year plan, the 10-year plan? Where can you take this club?
Well, we're at the start, really, of a new journey for the club. We've got new owners come on board. So our previous owner is still a shareholder, but now we're a larger group. I came on as chairman just over a year ago to try and steer the club in a new direction. And we want to look upwards now. We're in an area which is a hotbed of football, and we've got a lot of competition, you know, around us, especially with the likes of FC United and Salford have ripped through the leagues recently, and have sucked up all the the fair weather non-league supporters in the area, and we've got to identify very strongly with our town, and then we think we could be pretty successful. You know, the owners who have come in now, the new owners, are very, very, very serious on trying to make this club a success. We want to develop players, and we want to sell them on, and we want to use that to catapult ourselves further up the divisions. We've already done that as well in January, selling our striker Raul Correa to Blackpool, and then while we're having our end of season awards, we're watching on the TV him on the podium up at Wembley. So we fulfilled our first promise within 6 months, and we want to continue at that pace.
Yeah, and didn't you have Anthony Crowley at your awards too? So
we did. Yeah,
getting a bit of attention. But you're right, that kind of greater Manchester area, there are a lot of teams, and people are tribal, rightly so, aren't they? About teams that they've grown up with too, that their parents took them along to, and have that kind of support. But I'm glad to hear that the sport's kind of swung behind this name. We will check up on you if that's all right, and see how it goes down at and I will forever just call you Radcliffe now. I've dropped the borough myself, so there you go.
Thank you very much.
All right, Paul. Lovely to talk to you. Thanks for coming on the show.
Yep.
Thank you very much.
Thanks to Paul Hilton then at Radcliffe Borough for coming on. That's it from us this week. Dave and his added sound effect of ice in a glass.
You caught me on the hump there, boss. Sorry.
You make me feel so hot.
Well, I've always done that.
I was about to say thanks to all our guests, but thanks to two of them for picking up the phone. You can stay in touch with us via Twitter. We're at Non-League Show. Good luck to everyone on trying to track down some players and a manager. Dave has already said he's available. We may be back next week, but we'll definitely be back to tell you what happens with the AGM. Dave's off to put his feet up on a sun lounger somewhere. Don't forget to tell your friends. We're on Audio Boom, iTunes, Stitcher and TuneIn Radio. And, of course, that today's podcast was sponsored by Pitch Hero, celebrating 10 years of being at the heart of grassroots football. Goodbye.
JIBBA J-I-B-B-A-J-A-B-B-A.